Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our Share class learning. Well, first of all, Mamish, welcome back. All my classes are very special to me, and all my learning partners are very special to me. I really miss this class. This class is specifically a class, I think, on Amuna very much, and Dveikus, and Bitachon, and it was a long time. 3 weeks was a very long time. I understand the calendar. We had no choice. Baruch Hashem, we had the Yom Tov of Pesach. It was very hard for me. I miss all of you. Even when we're not together, we're still very much connected through our Torah. I truly miss this entire Chabura very much. And I also miss the learning on the Chizuk that I personally derive from this year very, very much. So I am thrilled. Thank you, Hashem, to be resuming this very important shir. This very important shir is dedicated to Lilui Nishmasa, Am Lazecher Nishmasa, Miriam Fun, Miriam Bas Chayim Mitzak Allah HaHashem. May Hashem have a true aliyah in the merit of all of our Torah learning and her family's dedication to supporting Torah learning. So I know you don't have a sefer in front of you. If you didn't check the message shortly before shir, I posted a short excerpt that we're going to be looking at from the Chazon Ish, actually, the Chazon Ish's classic sefer called Amuna Ubitachon. So you don't need it yet. We're going to need it much towards the end of Shir, but I'm just telling you, if you didn't open up my last message, you do need to look at it. I'm just going to go back a little bit since we haven't learned in a few weeks so that we remember what we are all talking about, and I'm going to begin by quoting from the sefer. Okay, we're talking about living in Hashem's presence, and while detaching from acquisitions, I'm reviewing, okay, this is not new material yet. Because we haven't learned for so long, let's just make sure we're back on the same page. Pun is intended. We have to work together with the Creator. We shouldn't just say, Hashem gave me this, this object belongs to the Creator. It's true, but if this is all you do, you lose the simple closeness to the Creator. The proper way is you should speak directly to Hashem, and you should say, who gave me this watch? Am I the owner, or are you the owner? Is this house mine or yours? Is this object mine or yours? Is my energy mine or yours? Imagine you are placing the entire world between yourself and the Creator and say, is this world mine or yours? So I'm going to share something with all of you that I didn't share in any shiurim yet because it wasn't relevant to any shiurim, but I think that it's relevant to this shiur, and I think you'll be able to understand why in a moment. And it's funny because I chose to begin reviewing from, who gave me this watch? Do I own this watch or do you, Hashem, own the watch? Is this house mine or is this house yours? I assume that the beeps are people calling in. I'm not sure. I'm just going to ask you to message me again my first year using this line. If for some reason you stop hearing me or something happens to the sound quality, then you should text me to let me know. Otherwise, just don't text me, but I'm saying, but if something happens to sound quality all of a sudden, just let me know, please, okay? So the beeps tell me new people are joining. Esther says, okay, very good. So I assume by the time people stop joining, there will stop being beeps. Okay, so going back. I began by saying, who gave me this watch? Am I the owner or are you the owner? Is this house mine or is it yours? Is this object mine or is it yours? Is my energy mine or is it yours? So if something you remember, we've been speaking about understanding that everything belongs to the Ribono Sha'olam. So over Yom Tov, over the first days of Yom Tov, I just wore it. I had a beautiful bracelet that I actually got in May. It would have been 17 years because I got it when I had my daughter, Baruch Hashem, and I graduated from my master's program. And I went with my husband to the jewelry store in Bar Park, and it was really, I would say, the nice piece of jewelry that I owned. It was 18 karat white gold, and it was like two rows of round diamonds, and there were about 10 square sapphires after every few, like it was a double row of diamonds and then a square sapphire. And it was very significant, very beautiful. And it also had sentimental value to me. I had it for almost 17 years. It was still classic, you know, it's not like jewelry that you look at and you say, oh, it's outdated or what was I thinking? And I just pointed it out at the Yom Tov table. On Yom Tov, I said, remember when we got this? And then, okay, I got dressed on second days and I went to put it on and I opened the box and it wasn't in the box. So, I mean, you can't make this up. And I don't know where it is. I apparently lost it. And the crazy thing is that it wasn't even a loose clasp. And the crazy thing is I didn't even go anywhere. We're not going anywhere. Nobody's going anywhere. It's not like I went to shul. It's not like I went to simcha. It's a fancy place I don't wear during the week. It's not like I went to simcha. It's not like I went to shul. It's not like I went on errands. If I would wear it on errands, I mean, we went nowhere. I went for some walks in the afternoon. I lost it. Either I took off, it fell in the garbage, or maybe it fell off outside. I have no idea. I can't find it. But I want you to know something. 10 years ago, if I would have lost that bracelet, I think I would have been like distraught. I would like to find it, but it's unbelievable to me how not more upset I am. And I told the kids at the table two very important things. I said, that day that I realized I lost it, second day's lunch, I said, I would obviously like to find the bracelet. And of course, again, we spoke about it. Yaakov and his Pachim Ketanim, we spoke about it on the Sefer. We don't throw away money. And yes, it had sentimental value. But two things that helped me very much will relate to exactly what we're speaking about here. I mean, my mom has just read this paragraph to you. Who gave me this watch? Do I own the watch or do you own the watch, Hashem? Is this house mine or is it yours? Is this object mine or is it yours? I'm literally reading that. It's page 212 in the Sefer. Imagine placing the entire world between yourself and the Creator and saying, is this world mine or is it yours? And in this way, I'm continuing with the Sefer for a minute, you will live in Hashem's presence. Otherwise, while detaching from acquisitions, you might lose closeness to Hashem. In other words, you want to detach from acquisitions but remain close to Hashem. And even if the Mechaber writes, the author writes, you have not yet attained closeness, such words can bring it. If you are working to attain a level by contemplating and speaking to Hashem, besides attainment at that level, you will attain closeness to Hashem. So in other words, you don't want to detach from your acquisitions and become distant from Hashem. You want to detach and come closer to Hashem. So I remember that a family member a couple of years ago lost a significant sum of money. And his spouse told him, and then related the story to me, very significant, more than I think my bracelet cost, significant. And his spouse told him, his wife told him, you were meant to lose something. Baruch Hashem, all you lost was money. And that's the first thing I thought of when I saw that this bracelet was missing. When we look around the world today and we see, Rahman al-Salam, what is being lost to so many people and so many families. Okay, if I had to lose something, Baruch Hashem, all I lost was a bracelet. You have to understand, I was like, Mamish, my nice piece of jewelry. And I am sorry that I lost it. But the other thing I thought of, a friend taught me a few years ago, you don't cry over something that won't cry for you. And I thought it was a teaching tool. And at the table, I told my children, I am upset. I would like to find it. I'm not crying over it. I'm not distraught over it. If we had to lose something, Baruch Hashem, all we lost was a bracelet. And you don't cry over something that does not cry for you. And how relevant it is to what we've been learning these past 6 weeks in the Sefer. Whose house is it? Whose apartment is it? Whose jewelry is it? Whose neshama, Admei Vestum Shana, is it? Nothing is mine. No, Joanna says she can't get in. Could somebody, Esther, could you answer Joanna on the Michal Shari Shir, please? It's very simple. You just have to follow the instructions exactly the way I wrote it, as evidenced by the fact that there are many people on this call. Okay? So we don't go around throwing away our money. Hashem gave us things and entrusted us with things, but we have to have the proper perspective. Hashem owns it. And sometimes he gives us this chus of having something for X amount of years, and sometimes he takes that away from us. We have to recognize it was never mine in the first place. I was allowed, granted, permission to enjoy something. And you shouldn't diminish it because even interestingly, so someone listening to this year, I'm actually going to get the Baal Turim so I could actually quote the exact pasuk, even though I haven't thrown the Baal Turim off my heart. Someone might say, well, jewelry is not important. So, you know, you could just say that easily because it's jewelry. But I want to quote you a very beautiful Baal Turim. It's in Sefer Bereishis, Parak Beis, when the Pasuk talks about the four rivers that came out of Eden. Okay? These four rivers, 212. I'm just turning. Okay? So the Pasuk says in 212, Bereishis, Parak Beis, Pasuk Beis, Uzahav ha'aretz ha'hitov, sham ha'bidolach, va'evan ha'shom. This is very cryptic. I certainly do not understand exactly what these psukim mean. I'm not talking about translating the psha. I'm just talking about the fact that these rivers coming out of Eden and flowing to different places in the world, we don't really understand anything about Maisa Bereishis. But the Pasuk, when it talks about this river, Zahav means gold, bidolach means crystal, evan ha'shom is some kind of other gem. So the Baal Turim says something very, very beautiful. Listen to this. HaBedolach, when the Pasuk uses the word Bedolach to refer to one of these rivers, the Baal HaTurim says, Beis Bamasores. There are two times that this word Bedolach, Beis Dalet Lamed Ches, is used in the Torah. Hacha, one time here, in regard to this river flowing out of Eden, and this Pasuk uses three different words to refer to gems and precious metals. Ve'idach, and one time in Bamidbar, Ve'eno Ke'en HaBedolach. When it's talking about the man in Sefer Bamidbar, it refers to the man being like a coriander seed, but the word that's used is bedolach. So why is the word by the man used bedolach, and the word by Zahav and Shoham and Evan also bedolach? This teaches you something. No, Esther, there's 100 participants who can call in on this line. There are not 100 participants who have called in yet, so she didn't reach the limit. Tell her to try from a different phone. Maybe it's her phone line, maybe she should try from a landline or her cell phone. We definitely have not reached the maximum. Okay? Milamed, I mean, I don't think there's 100 here. We didn't hear 100 beeps. The Baal Turim says, Milamed, everyone bear with me. Someone's trying to call to share. Milamed says the Baal Turim, She'avanim tovos umargolios yordu im haman. Isn't that unbelievable? Milamed she'avanim tovos umargolios yardu im haman. This teaches you that precious gems and pearls fell down with the man. So that's pretty unbelievable. Melamed she'avanim tovos umargolios yardu im haman. The Baal Turim, the Tur, the Rishon tells you that precious gems and pearls fell with the man. And we know that the Kohen Gadol adorned himself, of course it's the command of the Torah, to have precious gems, the Avnei Shoham, the Avnei Miluim, on the breastplate, on the shoulder stones, filling stones. So we do have this idea, and the Rambam says that you should buy for the woman jewelry before Yom Tov. So there is this idea of using stones and precious gems, everything Hashem put into this world, to appreciate the world of Hashem. But nevertheless, we have to, like the Mechaber says, detach from acquisitions without losing closest to Hashem. And we have to recognize and put everything into perspective. And I think a large part of the shir, like tremendous, I remember someone talking to me personally about the shir, from the shir chabura, about a certain vase, V-A-S-E, that was damaged, the family heirloom, and we have to put gosh mystic things into perspective. Am I upset that I lost it? Yes. Did it have sentimental value? Yes. Am I distraught? Am I crying? Am I horrified? No, because I understand that nothing is mine anyway. That's exactly what we're learning in this chapter. Hashem gave me this object, I'm quoting, this object belongs to the Creator. We have to put everything into perspective, and who owns things? Top of page 213. There are three stages. Why are people having trouble dieting? And all they have to do is follow exactly the way I typed it. I hope that everyone can join our learning, Be'ezras Hashem. There are three stages. Recognizing that everything is from Hashem, I'm continuing in the Sefer, talking to Hashem about this, and asking to be able to really feel it. Three stages. One, recognizing everything is from Hashem. Two, talking to Hashem. And three, asking to be able to feel it. And that's very important. It's not just to recognize that everything is from Hashem. It's not just to talk to Hashem. It's asking to be able to feel it. So you need to ask Hashem to help you internalize the fact that it's really from Him. It's not enough to say it. It's not enough to recognize it. To internalize it is a whole different level. We need to dive into Hashem. And it's interesting, I just taught a tefillah shir yesterday, and I quoted one sentence from Salvechik. I'll share with you that the Rav says, very interesting, when it comes to tefillah, specifically the Amidah, when Chazal referred to tefillah, when the Gemara talks about tefillah, that is the Amidah. For them, Amidah is tefillah. That is the essence, that is the climax, that is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, says Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs, of prayer. That's the Shmona Esrei, that's the Amidah. Rav Salvechik says, why do we begin with the words Hashem Sefasai Tiftach Ufi Yagi Tilasech, which is a pasuk from Kapitel Nun Aleph, chapter 51 of Tehillim. David HaMelech says, open up my lips, so my mouth should say your praise. Why do we begin the Amidah with that? Shachris, Mincha, Arvis, Musaf, whether you add Kishem Hashem Ekra, depending on the time of day. Oh, you start with Hashem Sefasai Tiftach. Why? Because Rav Salvechik says a mortal man doesn't even know what to ask for. I can't even formulate the words. Think about it. Could you say everything you need from Hashem? I need my washing machine to work properly. I need the dryer to work properly. I need to figure out how to get food. I need my body to work. How many parts of the body are there that I need to work properly? I don't even know how to name everything that I need to work properly. You can't even name everything you need. You can't really daven, says Rav Salvechik, unless Hashem gives you the words to daven. Think about that. I think I'm davening to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yes, I start the Shmona Esrei with Shavach. Then the middle brachos with praise. Then the middle brachos are bakashos, supplication. The last three brachos are hoda'ah, giving thanks. But the Rav says you wouldn't even be able to daven if Hashem did not give you the words. That's a very powerful statement. I think I daven and Hashem listens. No, without Hashem giving me the capability to daven, I don't even know what to say in the first place. That's why you begin, he says, with the climax of tefillah, of Hashem sefasai tiftach ufi yabitel sech. Otherwise, the whole amida doesn't even make sense. If God doesn't give me the capability to pray, I can't pray. So too, if Hashem, the author just said, does not give me the ability to really feel it, I won't feel it. I could say the bracelet belongs to Hashem. I could recognize it belongs to Hashem, but I need to daven to Hashem to help me really feel the reality. It's a different stage than just saying it. It's not just service of the lips. It must be service of the heart. That's why a person has to have kavana, believe the intention of the heart when they pray. As long as you do not live with this feeling, it will be difficult to attain love for Hashem. You will feel deep down to a certain extent that you own things. You will feel that your hands, your feet, your mind are not gifts from Hashem. You will not be able to sense the love behind the gifts. I'm reminded of a story that I did once quote in the shir before, but I think that it is it's a very powerful mashal nimshal that fits very clearly with what we're talking about. Understanding that everything is from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the author says that sometimes if you don't have that feeling, it's difficult to attain love for Hashem because you start to feel that you own things. Okay, your loving father. Oh, I'm quoting Malki Feldman. If she got in, she gave me the sefer. Okay. Living Amuna 3 by Rabbi David Ashir. So I thank her very much. Your loving father. Right? You might remember it. It's worth chazara. I read a parable about a man named Isaac, the youngest of three sons from a wealthy family. A rebellious young man, the only thing that kept him close to his father was his father's money. One day, at age 21, Isaac got fed up with abiding by his father's rules. I don't need your money anymore. I will become wealthy on my own. With a burning desire to make it big, Isaac traveled to a distant city. The first day there, he searched for a job. He met with failure. He had no money. He slept on a park bench. His luck was no better the next day. He was tired and hungry. His pride, however, would not allow him to return home. On day 3, a passerby asked Isaac, "Why are you sleeping in the park?" He said he had no job and no money. And the man said, "Don't worry, I have work for you. If you walk my dog every day for a half an hour, you can have a room in my house. I will provide for you 3 meals a day." Isaac was so thankful for the opportunity. With less pressure, he could look for work with a clear head. He found a position in a bakery. He was paid a very generous salary for the minor tasks that he performed. After a year, he had enough money to rent his own apartment. He opened the doors to his own bakery. Rent was cheap, but the location of the bakery was terrible. The first month, he lost money. One day, a man walked into the store, bought a pastry, tasted it, and said, "Wow, delicious! If your store was in a good location, you would make a fortune." Isaac said, "I wish, but I don't have the money." The man said, "I believe in your product. I will put up all the money to buy you a store in a prime location. We'll be partners." And that's what happened. The new bakery did so well, Isaac was soon able to buy another store and another. After 2 years, Isaac was the proud and successful proprietor of 5 bakeries. At that point, Isaac decided to write a letter to his father. "My dear father," began the letter, "I wanted to tell you after 3 years of being away from you, I've made my own fortune without any help from you or my brothers. You are welcome to come see my bakeries whenever you want." It just goes to show you that hard work and perseverance are the keys to success. You don't need a rich father to succeed after all. A few days later, Isaac received his father's written response. "My precious son," wrote his father, "I am very happy to hear you are doing well. But for your ultimate benefit, it's my obligation to tell you what really happened. Did you ever wonder why a total stranger will let you stay in his house for just walking his dog for a half an hour? I sent that man to get you off the streets. I paid your rent the whole year you lived there. Did you ever wonder why you were given such a high salary in that first bakery for such simple tasks that you did? I got you the job. I paid your salary. Also, that man who walked into your store and offered out of the blue to become your partner because your pastry was delicious, I sent him. He was using my money. And when you were in the new location, I paid people to patronize your store to make you successful. So you see, my son, it was not simply your hard work that earned you money. It was your loving Father who will always be there for you. This parable speaks loudly to us, writes Rabbi Ashir. So many times we work hard, we see success, and we might feel good about our hard work. And we should, by the way. If a person puts in a shtalus, should not feel like a shmata. The Torah wants you to have a healthy sense of pride, understand that you use the kochos God gave you. That's a little addendum to what I'm about to read to you. We might think, look how my hard work paid off. Look what I can do when I focus on something. And a person does have to focus, and a person does have to strive to do well. My daughter told me, actually we just read it in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph over Shabbos, Ahov Esam Lach. So Ahova Samlachos, she learned in school, 11th grade in TNM. She learned in school, Ahova Samlacha. If you have to do work, you should love it. Whatever you're doing, enjoy, take pride, love what you're doing. So no one take from this story that you should sit, doing nothing and expect everything to happen for you. That's not the point of the story. Hashem would tell us, however, who do you think? But once you do your effort and do the best you can, Ahova Samlacha, you have to have the proper Ashkafa. Who do you think put the money in your pocket, writes Rabbi Ashir, to be able to do what you did? Who sent you customers? Who gave you the ideas? Who helped you bake the pastry? Who gave you your health? This is not only true in business, of course. Our loving Father, he writes, is behind everything. He is the one sending us the messengers we need to meet and the messages we need to hear. He has so much to give. He loves to give. We have to recognize how much we need him. Without the Ribbono Shel Olam, mar arvi, ma anu, ma chayenu, ma tzidkasenu, ma nomar u ma nedaber. Halo Elokim matzas avon avdecha. We're nothing without Hashem. Hashem is involved in every part of our day and every second of our lives. Someone, I reached out to someone today. I said, how are you doing? So she said, it's difficult. So I said, she said, day by day. So I said, you're right, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. So she actually replied, she said, minute by minute, which is true. Every second of our lives must be us in the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's no better place, last sentence of Rabbi Ashir, for us to be than close to him, and we should constantly seek his help. So our author writes, there are three stages, recognizing everything is from Hashem, but it's not enough, talking to Hashem, and finally asking to be able to really feel it. Like Rav Soloveitchik says, it's in the Siddur Masorat HaRav, in his commentary to the Shemona Esrei, you begin with Hashem Sufasai Tiftach, because without the Ribbono Shel Olam, I wouldn't even know what to say. So I need to ask Hashem's help for me to daven. I need to ask God's help for me to recognize everything is from him. As long as you do not live with this feeling, it will be difficult to attain love for Hashem. You will feel deep down to a certain extent, I read this paragraph already, that your hands, feet, mind are not gifts from Hashem. You will not be able to sense the love behind the gifts. Okay, next paragraph. We may hear wondrous stories about special divine providence. Hundreds of such stories are circulated, many of them in print. It is difficult for one who lives with minimal degree of inwardness to hear these stories, okay? This is for sure true. Listen again. We hear many wondrous stories about special divine providence. There are hundreds of such stories which are circulated, many of them in print. It's difficult for one who lives with minimal degree of inwardness to hear these stories. Why? For the simple reason they actually take away from the proper relationship we are to have with Hashem. How is that possible? What do you mean? Aren't those stories of wondrous special divine providence meant to strengthen our relationship to Hashem? How could they take away from the relationship we have with Hashem through the daily events of our lives? So he writes, instead of waking up and sensing that it is Hashem who enables one to stand up, some people make the mistake of thinking they see the Creator only when something extraordinary happens. I happen to agree with this paragraph very strongly, by the way. I know sometimes things in the Sefer the first time around, and maybe the second time around, are hard for us to necessarily chop right away. Although I do find that the reality is that everything in the Sefer is very, very true, as we are learning, even though it sometimes takes us a couple of times to get his point. The reality is it's all true, very true. But this I agree with right away. Sometimes, he says, those stories of special, wondrous, divine providence actually do a disservice. How? You think it's being mechazik, my relationship. What's the problem? Is that the only time you recognize Hashem? If everything works out and there's an amazing story of divine providence, then I say, wow, it's Yad Hashem. So what does he say? People make the mistake of thinking. They see Hashem, they see the Creator only when something extraordinary happens. What's the point of all those stories? He says, some of which hundreds are circulated, many of them in print. The problem is that we think, oh, there's Yad Hashem. So what about when you lose your bracelet? What about when it's not such amazing divine providence revealed? What about when it's not the best news? What about when it's not when you hope for? I mean, I would like to have not lost my grace, and don't get me wrong. So what about then? I'm not going to circulate such a wondrous divine story of divine providence now. What's a divine providence? I didn't even go anywhere. I don't even know where it is. How could I possibly have lost it? But everybody's in self-quarantine, basically. I'm not going to the supermarket. How did I lose it? I have no idea. So he says, from all those stories, the dangers, instead of waking up and sensing it is Hashem who enables one to stand up, some people make the mistake of thinking they see the Creator only when something extraordinary happens. And I think that's very profound. I'm actually going to quote from an excerpt from Mishpacha. Let me see if there's a date on here. It's like from a couple months ago. Okay? There was, in their 9 to 5, which is featured, I don't know, I think once a month, they feature somebody who's like successful in the business world, but also makes tremendous Kiddushei Hashem, sanctification of the divine name, in the business world. So they featured a specific person, even though this was public, and it was in Mishpacha, and everybody could have read it. I still don't want to say the name, so I'm going to try and say it without giving any detail here, okay? So there was a talk back to the interview. Okay? They interviewed a certain person, a woman, who found herself in a very difficult situation. She sort of made a deal with God, so to speak. The situation worked out. They launched a business. Okay. Again, this is from Mishpacha magazine. Thousands and thousands of people around the world that read the letter that I'm reading to. So it wasn't just a letter to the editor. Mishpacha actually published this called Talk Back on its own page. And the writer says, quote, Amuna must be unconditional. Okay. He writes, thank you for your interview with Mrs. So-and-so of this business. It contained a lot of inspiring material. Yet the interview seemed to convey a message that when we daven and trust in Hashem, that when we work hard and do what is right according to Allah and Hashkafa, then everything will work out positively the way we would like to, or at least in a way that we are able to look back and see God's chesed in all of his ways. I am not qualified, continues the letter writer, to give musar or tochacha, but this all too common and dangerous mindset alarmed me enough to feel the need to engage and write in. Hashem miraculously took her out of that situation because she made a promise. Do we know, though, really the exact reason Hashem saved her in that situation? There are plenty of people who, when faced with a dire situation, have made similar kabbalos, promises, and Hashem answers them with a simple yet painful no. Still remember Nachshon Waxman, Hashem Yikom Damo, Zechono Levracha, Mizlavai was on a Motzi Shabbos. If you remember, the attempt to rescue him was a botched attempt. Commander Nir Paratz was also killed in the attempt to rescue Nachshon. They also tortured him. Reports came out after. I can't even repeat what they did to Nachshon when he was still alive. They tortured him terribly. And of course, I'm sure you remember, I remember, it was almost 25 years ago, because I was in Eretz Yisrael that year. Everybody was davening. I mean, I was in Eretz Yisrael for my seminary that year. Everybody was davening and davening and davening. Kotel gatherings, tefillahs all around the world. So we took kabbalas, we davened. And I remember that his father told the rabbi who eulogized him at the Levi Motzei Shabbos, please tell people Hashem did hear our tefillahs. He just said no. And I found this talk back very powerful. Doesn't mean, the letter writer says, that tefillahs and resolutions were not as valued by Hashem by the other people. Hashem is the notzer chesed la'alafim. He preserves kindness for thousands of generations. He concludes by saying, if we link our bitachon, emuna, and hishtadlus, bitachon, trust, that's why he's saying you an excerpt from the Chazon Ish's emuna and bitachon, we'll look at shortly. He continues and says, if we link our bitachon, emuna, and hishtadlus to an outcome that meets our expectation or our understanding, we are setting ourselves up for a crisis of faith. In other words, if I make a deal with God, if you got me out of the situation, I'm going to do this for you, or I'll do this for you, and he gets me out. That's good. But let's say I make a resolution or a promise or a Kabbalah, and Hashem doesn't help me out the way I think he should be helped out, then what happens? Difficult things happen that don't make sense. They might not make sense when they happen, and they might not even make sense 50 years later. Only unconditional amunah and bitachon can allow a person to survive and thrive for the long term. Granted, it's not an exciting message, like an inspirational story that tidies everything up. Perhaps Mrs. So-and-so could clarify her thoughts on this. I thought it was very powerful. I thought it was interesting that Mishpacha printed it. I thought it was brave of the letter writer to write it in, but that's exactly what the Mechaber just said in these paragraphs. I am on page 213. He says, all those stories of wonderful, special divine providence that are circulated, many of them in print, may actually detract from our connection to God. Why? These stories might make people mistaken in thinking they see the Creator. They're connected. He's listening to them only when something extraordinary happens. Certainly, if one is far from Amunah, the Mechaber continues, from faith, these stories can serve as a first stage to get him to appreciate the concept of divine providence. So as a kiruv to somebody who's very far from Amunah, he says, those stories can be a stepping stool or a springboard, a segue, a bridge to understanding what divine providence means. They're useful. But to stop there, says the author, to build your entire perspective of life based on such miraculous stories does a disservice to Hashem, I'm Amish quoting from the Sefer, and his uninterrupted guidance of the world. Do we only believe in Hashem when everything works out, when we are following the news these past 6 weeks? There are tremendous Torah dik yidin, Rachman and son, who have been taken from us, from Rashi Yeshivas to Mashkichim, from mothers to fathers to sons, young, older, all ages, Holocaust survivors. Do I only connect to God when I see divine providence? So that's a question. In the context of life, my bracelet obviously means nothing. Who cares? What's going to help me in all my mess? Tell me zero in all my MS. Mamish zero. Less than zero. Nothing. But do I only connect with Hashem? If I make a deal with you, Hashem, and I find it. So now what? Okay, I don't know if it's a proper hashkafa or not. I did not ask Hashayla because I figured our Rabbanim are inundated. Esther, am I saying it right? Inundated. Bombarded. I know how to say that. With Shaila, so I didn't even ask Shaila about it, but a couple of people said, I hope you said the special pasuk and gave money to Rabbi Meir Balhanes. I'll tell you that I did not. I personally do not hold of that. No one should attack me. It's good you're all on mute. If you do, it's fine. I would not do something like that without asking for a Shaila because I think it's like a charm. It's almost like a magic trick. Like if I do this, if I say his pasuk, I'm giving money to Rabbi Meir Balhanes, I'm going to automatically find my bracelet. Hashem wants to teach me something. I think we have to be very careful. I'm using my bracelet as an illustrative example, by the way, okay, of life in general. No, inundated. Inundated. Did I say it better? Inundated. Oh. Okay, I'll look it up on Google after Esther. Inundated. Here we go. I hope you'll understand the point. So I didn't even ask Ashayla if that's, you know, appropriate to do that. Rabbi Meir Balanes with those psukim. I don't know if it is. I didn't do it. If Hashem wants me to find it, he will. And if he doesn't want me, he won't. And we have to put everything into perspective. But I have to be careful because if I would miraculously find it. Now I say, wow, that's a shkacha. Do you understand? I'm using it as an illustrative true story. But it's very illustrative of these pages that we're learning now. Let's say I found it and it was miraculous. And wow, it was such a shkacha. So now I see Hashem. What about building your perspective when something extraordinary does not happen, says our Sefer, which is why I think that talk back was very powerful, which leads us right into the Chazon Ish. So that letter writer does not quite quote sources. But what's very interesting is that in a much different lashon, the Chazon Ish speaks about this. So please go to your last message from me, okay? I posted the pages. Let me just tell you why I did not give it to you in the Lashon HaKodesh. The Faith and Trust, in English it's called, Amunu Ubitachon. It's a Chazon Ish's classic Sefer on Faith and Trust. I have the Sefer that is both Hebrew and English on two sides of the page. The Hebrew in this is very difficult to understand Lashon HaKodesh. It is not regular, easy to understand Hebrew. Okay? You're so cute. Okay, fine. Someone said, she's sure I'm going to find it, but Hashem wanted me to have a story to illustrate. Okay, maybe I will, but maybe I won't. Okay, I obviously hope I will. I'm a normal person, but I'm really not upset considering how upset I would have been 8 years ago. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Please go to your handout. Oh, what I was saying is the reason I did not give it to you is because if you look in the original Lashon HaKodesh, it's very, very difficult. I'm sure if we had the time, we could study through it together, but we are not going to. We're just going to use the English, please. So the Chazon Ish, by the way, never had children. Brother-in-law of the Stipler Gaon. So we're talking about Gaonai Olam. Mamish Gaonai Olam. So what does he write on Bitachon? The first chapter is called Amunah. The second chapter, Perek Beis, is Bitachon. Here we go. I gave it to you because I want you to see it inside for yourself. There is an old misconception. I can't believe how Mamish ties in exactly what we're learning in the Sefer, as well as that talk back that I brought you from Mishpacha. There's an old misconception rooted in the hearts of many. I hope you're looking inside with me. When it comes to the concept of trust in Hashem, known as bitachon, this term used by the righteous to name a celebrated and central character trait. So bitachon is a celebrated and central character trait, but this term has undergone a change. It has mistakenly become a term used to describe the obligation to believe in any situation a person finds himself in when he faces an undecided future with two ways of prayer, one good and the other not. That surely the good outcome will be the one to grow. That was a very long run-on sentence. Let's look at it again. I want to make sure you understand what the Chazon Ish is saying. So now I'm not quoting, okay, from Mishpacha. And some person who wrote in without their name signed, which was a very powerful letter. But we're talking about the Chazon Ish now, Zatzal. This term, bitachon, used by the righteous, I'm going back to the beginning of that sentence, to name a celebrated and central character trait, has undergone a change. It has mistakenly become a term to describe the obligation to believe that in any situation in which you find yourself, when you face an undecided future with two ways of prayer, one good and the other not, you believe with bitachon, trust, that surely the good outcome will be the one to occur. Chazon Ish says that's a mistake. If one is doubtful and fears the possibility of the opposite of good occurring, he is lacking in trust in Hashem. So if a person's in a dire situation, and it could go one way to the positive, and it could go the other way to dire, we are mistaken if we believe that bitachon means it will always work out for the good. If you believe that you're lacking in trust in Hashem, says the Chazon Ish, but understand this understanding of trust is not correct. For as long as the future has not been revealed through prophecy, and today there is no prophecy, the future is not decided, for who knows Hashem's judgments and rewards? No, trusting in Hashem is not that, but rather, what is then trusting in Hashem? What then is bitachon? The belief that nothing happens by chance. And that I didn't give you the finishing of the sentence. I didn't take a picture of the whole next page because I'm only quoting one sentence. You don't have the next sentence. However, trusting in Hashem is not that. It's not that everything will work out for the wonderful path, for choice A, for the positive, for the miraculous, wondrous, revealed divine providence. No. But rather the belief that nothing happens by chance. That's bitachon. And that everything that occurs under the sun is a result of the decree of the Almighty. Not that it's going to work out the way I want it to work out, but rather, this is a decree of the Almighty. Halavai, the worst thing I should ever suffer. Halavai was that I lost a significant bracelet. Halavai, it's the worst thing I should ever suffer. Please, Hashem, I would take it b'simcha. I told that to Hashem. I said, Hashem, if I meant to lose something, I literally accept this b'simcha. Thank you. I should be so zocha that this should be it. Go to the next page, the next picture, okay? So I was the beginning, that was the opening to this chapter on trust. Now I skipped a few paragraphs to Chelek Beis in the same paragraph on Bitachon. According to this, faith and trust in Hashem are one and the same. Just that faith is the general faith, meaning amuna, okay? And Bitachon meaning trust, are one and the same. Just that faith is the general approach of the believing person, Amuna is the general approach of the believing person, and trust is the person's approach to himself, with faith being the theory and trust being the practice. I didn't think I could teach this without you seeing it inside. The Amuna is the theory, but trust is, now let's put it into practice. It is easy to trust at times when the need to trust does not play an important part in one's life. But we're not tested, or we're not faced with the coronavirus pandemic, when everything is calm, it's easy to say, I trust in Hashem. But it is much more difficult to have trust at times when it is indeed called for. Someone just sent me, it was Yom HaShoah yesterday, someone sent me a short Facebook post. It was in Ivrit, a picture of a Holocaust survivor in his talis and tefillin who was just nifter from coronavirus during the war. It was just one short paragraph. I don't know the whole story, but somehow he was hiding someone. He was able to keep his tefillin up in a tree. And every day he climbed the tree to put on his tefillin. He and his friends, I don't know if he was in a camp or a labor camp, they were able to store tefillin up in the tree. And every day he and his friends climbed up the tree to put on the tefillin. It's a level that we can't fathom. It's something I can't imagine. It's something that's so way beyond me. That is the most ultimate degree of bitachon, amunism, practice. Says the Chazon Ish, it's so easy to trust at times when the need to trust does not play an important part of one's life. It is much more difficult to have trust at times when it is indeed called for. It is easy to speak of trust when it is just in theory and not in practice. At times like that, a person is enjoying a beautiful and pleasurable dream. At times, as time goes on, he fools himself and others into thinking he possesses greater trust in Hashem than his peers. And the reality is that he is using this attribute to make his dreams of an unknown future more pleasant. When everything is calm, when everything is wonderful, when there's no coronavirus pandemic, when we're not all struggling and grappling with different nishonos every single day, stuck in our homes for over 6 weeks, just trying to figure out how to get food in a healthy way is so complicated. To keep our children happy is not always so easy. To remind ourselves that it's Baruch Hashem yom yom, and sometimes it's Baruch Hashem raga by raga. And sometimes we have to go to great lengths today to understand and to see where is Hashem. So where is Hashem? Do I only see Him when all the pieces fit into the puzzle the way I think the puzzle should be? Only when there's tremendous divine providence revealed? Only when there's a happy little neat ending to the story and all the ends tie up, there's God. Is that true? No. It's easy to have amuna when things are perfect, says the Chazon Ish. When the need to trust does not play an important part in your life. But it's much more difficult when we're tested. You should never test us. Ribbono Shel Olam should never test, or me, I should say. You should never test me. I don't want to have to be tested because I don't know what I would do. The real test that can decide whether a person really believes in what he is saying, whether he really does place his trust in Hashem, or he has just trained himself to speak of that trust. Do I really believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam? Do I really trust in God? Or do I just talk like I believe? It's a strong question. It's a scary question. Is it a part of me or is it not part of me? Is when he meets up with a situation, your third picture, that demands he indeed places his trust in Hashem. I should never be tested. David HaMelech was able to say, Yasar Yisrani Ka, Tamas Rosh Chodesh. V'lamavis lo nisanani. He thanked Hashem for Yisurim. At least it was a Mavis. Chalid v'chas. Should be tested. I should be tested. I don't know what I would do. Because it's easy for me to talk about Amun and Bitachon. It's easy for me to teach a Sefer for 6.5 years. It's easy for me to say, we trust, we have faith, we believe. Chalila, when we're tested, says the Chazon Ish, that's a real question. At such a time, the role of trust is to guide his actions. That's when you need them to guide your actions. To heal and soothe him. Does he turn to the trait of trust and actually trust in Hashem? Or does he particularly at this time, when there's no neat ending, when we see Rashi Yeshivas and Mashkiach and Erev Chayyim and families of Yishomim and Almanos now, Rachman Alitzando Aleinu. So we don't see the end. So now, how's my Emunah and Bitachon now? Or does he particularly at this time not make use of it? I don't know if anybody saw, but Baruch Hashem, it's a sort of Mechaim Nisim, Eli Bir, Baruch Hashem returned to Eretz Yisrael on Sheldon Edelstein's private plane. I saw he cannot go home, his family said, to his apartment, because his apartment's on the fourth floor of the building. There's no elevator. He is still too weak to climb up four flights of stairs. But he was away for 4 months. First, he was on a fundraising trip for United Hatzalah, and he became sick. He was on a respirator with COVID for weeks. He said he thought he would never see his family again. And I saw there were some pictures on Yeshiva Well News of his return to Eretz Yisrael. And a doctor with an oxygen tank led him off the plane. But when he descended, he stopped on the stairs going down the tarmac, covered his eyes, he said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That's unbelievable, bitachon. A person is facing death, and he descends from the plane with a yarmulke on his head, and the Shema Yisrael on his lips. That's bitachon. Does he turn to the trait of trust and actually trust in Hashem, or does he particularly at this time not make use of it? Does he turn to unreliable mortal alloys or to useless and ignoble strategies? And something that, never mind you have to ask yourself, it's something that I have to ask myself. And it's a question we all have to ask ourselves during this time, because the whole world, Eretz Yisrael, Medina Yisrael, Am Yisrael, we're all being tested. We're being tested in a way we could never have imagined. We're seeing many disasters. Yes, many Baruch Hashem, like Ali Beer and Dr. Yisachar Greenberg, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Our amazing endings. They should live with the Richos Yamim and Shanim to continue serving the Klal and Ribon Shalom and Meir Vesem. And not everyone is Zocha. It's frightening. What's my level of Amuna? But more than that, what's my level of Bitachon? It's easy, says the Chazon Ish, to talk about it. And our Mechaber says these stories can actually serve as an impediment to our Avodas Hashem. For someone who's just coming to the concept of the Shkacha Pratis, they're wonderful. But when we move past that level, do we only trust in God when all the endings tie up and everything is neat and there's no loose ends? Or the other way, it's something that I have to work on. Something that perhaps other people have to ask themselves as well. The proper way to live, I'm just finishing the sentence, is that just as you feel Hashem's guidance when special, miraculous events occur, so too you must feel His guidance each day and each hour. It doesn't say when miraculous things occur, doesn't say when it's wonderful and special. Each day, each hour, minute to minute, whether it works out the way I want or whether it doesn't work out the way I want. That's the Ribono Shel Olam running the show. I thank you all for calling in. Sorry, I went a little bit over. Miriam Bas Chaim, Yitzchak's Neshama Shav, and Aliyah Neshama. We should be zochet to an ear of Ani Hashem Rofa Echa. I wish you a Chodesh Tov and a good Shabbos. Thank you very much, everybody. Kol Tov.